Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
This is The Takeaway. Thanks so much for listening. So, Americans want to know, which Obama will we see tonight in the second candidate debate? The pre-presidential, full of hope and intensity and promise Obama?
That's why I'm in this race. That's why I'm running for the presidency of the United States of America. To offer change that we can believe in.
Whoa, that takes you back. Or will we get the hesitant, slightly defensive, detached, professorial Obama?
We stepped in and had the toughest reforms on Wall Street since the 1930s. We said, you've got banks, you've got to raise your capital requirements. You can't engage in some of this risky behavior that is putting Main Street at risk. We're going to make sure that you've got to have a living will so we can know how you're going to wind things down if you make a bad bet, so we don't have other taxpayer bailouts. In the meantime, by the way, we also made sure that all the help that we provided those banks was paid back every single dime with interest.
Two Obamas. All right, it's not completely fair to compare a campaign speech, which is oratory, let's just say, and a candidate debate, which is something else entirely. But you're hearing right there the key problem for any president facing re-election. There's the single hopeful elect me candidate from 4 years ago who always splits into the presidential alter ego, whose message in the re-election campaign is the very different, let's keep it going, or re-elect me, please, or the probably not very good alternative message, please don't dump me. Joining us to talk about the inherent messaging problem for any incumbent is Paul Glastris, a former speechwriter for President Bill Clinton and editor-in-chief of The Washington Monthly. Paul, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
How does this conflict work? The hopeful kind of candidate who doesn't have to run on a record and the incumbent president who really is haunted a little bit by the please don't dump me alternative message.
Why, it's tough, right? He came in, he got a lot done, and the country doesn't feel that it's hugely better off 4 years later. So there's this disconnect between his message of look what I've done on banking reform, look what I've done on healthcare reform, and an electorate that doesn't feel the change. And in that gap is the difficulty the president's having.
It seemed to me in the Clinton years, what Bill Clinton would do when he was faced with issues that were right down in front of him, and you know, we don't have to go into those. There were the personal issues, and there were also some political issues as well in dealing with the Republican Congress. The Clinton strategy was always to just sort of press a higher floor on the elevator, to go up higher and just kind of rise above it all, both in his rhetoric and his attitude. Does Obama have a problem doing that?
I think sometimes he goes too high and talks too much about hope and change and so forth, and not enough, ironically, about he's not as good as Clinton was at taking the prosaic policy achievements and policy ideas and weaving them into a message and a vision where the public can understand, I understand what you're trying to accomplish. I understand where you're taking the country. I understand what you've already achieved. I understand what your agenda is. Bill Clinton always sort of took the voter as a fairly intelligent fellow who was perfectly happy that you had been president but wants to know what you're going to do for me next. Barack Obama kind of gets lost in the details of his policies. And as we heard in that first clip, he wasn't inexact or anything. He was perfectly accurate in describing, for instance, his bank policies, but they didn't attach to anything forward-looking. It wasn't coherent. It didn't connect to a strategy for making things better.
You know, Paul Glastris is a former speechwriter for President Bill Clinton, editor-in-chief of The Washington Monthly. I think you've hit on it here. Bill Clinton, when he would talk about those programs, he'd always use this rhetorical device, because of what I did, a housewife in Little Rock, Arkansas can do blank, blank, blank. He said the exact same policy thing, but it was always the story of a voter, of a housewife, of a worker, of a family. And Barack Obama just stays with the policy frame and it makes him sound detached.
Yeah, that's a pretty good Bill Clinton, by the way.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. I think that's part of it, that he has a little bit of a hard time imagining the life of the voter and how it's going to affect that voter. I also think that there is such a thing as vision. And I don't mean vision in the big, broad, you know, highfalutin sense, but a coherence of vision, an understanding of how – what we've not seen from Barack Obama yet is an explanation of how the four or five big things he's done. And what are those? Financial reform, green energy reform, education reform.
Healthcare, hello.
Healthcare, of course. How do they all fit together in a strategy for more jobs and more prosperity going forward? There's a feeling that I've done this for this problem and this for that problem, but there's not a kind of coherence where Bill Clinton kind of had this story that he told in almost every speech, which was we're going from an industrial society to an information society. And we need to move the country from one to the other. We need pathways to get Americans from the jobs that are falling away to the jobs that are coming. And here are the things I'm going to do to help each of you get there. And so there was a vision, a story, something people could follow. We don't yet have that out of Obama.
Well, we suspect that maybe putting that into the narrative will be part of the debate preparations. But one of the things that surprises me, I have no particular criticism of Mitt Romney. I mean, I can argue policy forever and ever. But, you know, I'm surprised here because Romney, as skilled as he is, he's not that great. I'm surprised that Obama is in a position of weakness going into this second debate. I mean, Mitt Romney is very clear. He's very pleasant. He's very likable on some level, but, you know, not as likable statistically as Obama. I'm just surprised that Obama is on the defensive here.
Well, you know, and if we're on the subject of coherence and vision, what we saw for the first time, I think, out of Mitt Romney at this last debate was a set of policies that all fit together around the simple concept of creating more jobs. He sanded off some of the rough conservative edges, kind of, you know, in my opinion, buried the truth of some of his policies. But people could understand it. And Bill Clinton used to say, bad plan beats no plan.
Huh.
So people could see that Romney had ideas for change and a sense of where he was going, and they didn't get that sense from Barack Obama.
Paul Glasgow, former speechwriter for President Bill Clinton and editor-in-chief of the Washington Monthly, thanks so much.
My pleasure.
We're going to leave you with one of our fabulous listeners who gave a contribution yesterday. We asked for people to send letters to the children of Syria, and we got this from Naomi, a middle schooler in New York.
Dear Syrian child, our ages are not so far apart, but our lives and countries are. I have anxiety. This means I live in the daily fear of something horrible. My fear isn't real, but the fear that you are experiencing every day is real, and I wish I could change it. Soon, I will go to high school, and then college. In college, I will study psychology. Then, I will go to medical school to become a psychiatrist. I want to help people like you get over the trauma of their experiences. And who knows, maybe in 20 years we will meet, changing the both of our lives forever. Hope to see you soon, Naomi.
Thank you, Naomi. 877-8-MY-TAKE. I'm John Hockenberry. This is The Takeaway.
The Takeaway is supported by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and the Henry Luce Foundation for Increased Understanding of East and Southeast Asia. Funding for Detroit coverage of The Takeaway is supported in part by W.K. Kellogg Foundation, WKKF.org. The Takeaway is produced by WNYC and Public Radio International in collaboration with The New York Times and WGBH Boston Public Radio.